Hi, everybody. My name is Ben Molina. I am a native from Bolivia. I am a social worker here living in St. Louis. I work for the Alzheimer's Association, and I am a dog dad. I do my hair tall, check my nails. Baby, how you feeling? Hair tall, check my nails. Baby, how you feeling? Feeling good as hell. Baby, how you feeling?
Saludos, everybody. Soy Alejandro Santiago, your host at We Live Here Auténtico, and so grateful that you're tuning in today. We'd love to hear from you, so let us know what you love about the podcast and the stories we're sharing.
Hola, St. Louis. Soy Gabriela Ramirez Arellano, also your co-host on the podcast, ready for another great conversation. This project has really been so much fun, and we have gotten to know so many amazing people doing great things in St. Louis and also across the country.
Today, our guest, Ben, has now been living here in St. Louis for 8 years and has a master's degree in social work from Washington University. Ben currently serves as program manager for the Alzheimer's Association Greater Missouri Chapter. He is also on the board for social work leaders in healthcare and, like he said, a full-time dog dad.
So I was actually born in Bolivia, Cochabamba, Bolivia, if you're familiar with geography, but my family wanted to had better opportunities for myself and my siblings. So we ended up moving to the United States around the year 2000. I was actually 9 years old, and we moved to Maryland, Silver Spring, which is just north of DC. And I lived there till I was about 22. But growing up in Maryland, I had a really wonderful experience. It was a very diverse area, and I actually moved to St. Louis because my partner and I had been dating for a year and I wanted to continue my studies. I had just finished my degree in mental health, and so I wanted to go to UMSL. So I applied to UMSL, and then I moved here, and I didn't know anything about social work growing up. I had no familiarity with it, but when I was in community college, I was doing a degree in mental health, and we talked about the different career choices that you could potentially make in this field. So we talked about social work, counseling, and psychology, and I really liked the fact that there was so much flexibility with social work. You could really go into such a wide variety of fields, and so I ended up choosing that career path. And my partner actually graduated from UMSL as well. And so he had recommended applying to that school. And so I applied to UMSL, got in, and I was able to finish my bachelor's degree. But it was a wonderful program. The social work program that they had taught me so much about being a social worker, ethics, how to work with people, and I think they really do produce wonderful social workers in the area.
As Ben devotes himself to work for the Alzheimer's Association, let me give you some definitions first. Alzheimer's is a type of dementia that affects memory, thinking, and behavior. Symptoms eventually grow severe enough to interfere with daily tasks.
Alzheimer's is not a normal part of aging, and in our research, we found that the greatest known factor is increasing age. The majority of people with Alzheimer's are 65 and older and worsens over time.
Let's listen in and learn more about how Ben found his career and passion.
When you're a social work student, you have to do practicums, which are internships. And so when I was looking for different practicum opportunities, I knew that I wanted to stay working with the older population. And I was also working part-time at a nursing home called Nazareth Living Center down in South County. And so I applied for a position at a wonderful organization called Memory Care Home Solutions. Their whole mission is about training caregivers to be able to care for the person living with dementia at home for as long as possible. And so they really inspired me to continue working with this population, with people impacted by Alzheimer's and dementia, as well as the caregivers. And so I completed 2 different practicum experiences with them in undergrad and grad school. And I gained so much knowledge about working with caregivers and understanding dementia, which even working at a nursing home part-time, I really didn't grasp it fully until I had this hands-on experience. And so after I graduated with my master's degree in social work from Washington University here in St. Louis, I applied for jobs and I knew I wanted to stay in this field. And thankfully there was a position open at the Alzheimer's Association and I was able to join as the helpline manager. I specifically remember having a class at UMSL where people from different organizations came to talk to us about the work that they do. And I don't remember who the speaker was, but I just remember that she had mentioned that there was a huge need for people working in this space, working with older adults. And that stuck with me. Also, having worked part-time at Nazareth, I knew how much need there was in the community for people working in this space. And so I found my niche working with people with Alzheimer's and dementia, but I knew that I wanted to stay in that space working with older adults.
Did you know that approximately 13% of Hispanics who are 65 or older have Alzheimer's or another dementia? And while Hispanics are 1.5 times more likely than whites to have dementia, more research is needed to understand why.
Research of various studies projected that a number of Latinos living with Alzheimer's could increase from 379,000 in 2012 to 3.5 million by 2060, a growth of 832%. If a medical breakthrough is not discovered that cures or slows the progression of the disease. As the number of Latino families touched by Alzheimer's increase over the decades, as individuals or caregivers, the economic impact of Alzheimer's on the Latino community will reach a cumulative $2.35 trillion by 2060, according to the projections. The perfect storm poses significant challenges that should be examined through a health, equity, and economic justice lens and be addressed with the utmost urgency by policymakers, healthcare systems, and industry and community leaders.
The other interesting thing I read during our research is the stigma that exists around dementia, and we don't proactively address memory loss of our loved ones or reach out for treatment. And these are some of the similar struggles Ben also sees in the Hispanic community here in St. Louis.
From my perspective in my career working with the Alzheimer's Association, lack of awareness about this disease. I think there continues to be the stigma in our community that as you get older, it's normal to have memory changes and to begin to forget things. And although cognitively, perhaps we do begin to process information different, when we begin to have memory loss, that impacts our day-to-day activities or how we function in our day-to-day lives, that's of concern. And so in our community, perhaps we don't reach out to a primary care physician or don't go to neurologists to get any formal background done or about this disease. And so we miss out and families are not getting diagnosed. They're living with this disease at home. I think the benefit, you know, the positive thing is that we have such a close-knit community that families are caring for these individuals, you know, regardless of whether they're having memory changes, and they do continue to have strong family support. But early diagnosis is really important because families can have access to legal planning, can begin to think about if they, in the future, if they're not able to make their own decisions, you know, who would they want in their family to make those decisions? What are those healthcare directives that they want to make sure are followed? Estate planning, etc.
These are really good points. And honestly, it's a difficult topic to bring up in conversation when you see a loved one that starts to show signs of dementia.
That's why it's important to have these conversations. So in the case of a loved one starts with signs of dementia, we know what to do, what type of measures to take to be informed and ready in regards to care and any legal work to address. It's coming down on me, harder like misery. It's coming down on me. I'm ready.
It's really a lot about raising awareness about this disease and about the warning signs. And on our website, there's actually ALZ.org, there's wonderful tips for families on how to begin having these conversations with families about, you know, their healthcare directives or about the power of attorneys. I have a lot of conversations with families about what a power of attorney is and how they can go about it. I think we're very lucky in Missouri, where the Missouri Bar Association released a free healthcare directive and durable power of attorney for healthcare. But in Missouri, you also have to have a financial power of attorney so that whoever you appoint to be that person can make those financial decisions for you as well. So it's about normalizing the conversation as I'm talking with families, letting them know that these conversations are important, and also, you know, letting them know I'm having these conversations at my age with my family and my partner so that they are aware if, you know, God forbid something happens to me, they know what I want to happen to my body. It doesn't have to be a formal or a serious conversation either, as long as you let your families know, hey, you know, I was thinking about this. If I'm ever not able to make my own decisions, I really... I'd rather not have any medical interventions and just let me die peacefully from natural causes. Mm-hmm. Or if I'm old, you know, when I pass away, I want to be cremated versus buried. That's really important for me. Or, you know, if I am ever put into a state where in a vegetative state, I don't want any medical intervention. So the hope is to actually have these conversations earlier in the disease process, before diagnosis or early enough in the disease where they're still able to make those decisions. Mm-hmm. Because once they're past a point where they're not able to make those decisions, unfortunately, legally, they may not be able to appoint somebody. And we would encourage them to talk with attorney or somebody about what those next steps would be for the family. Unfortunately, in most cases, it might be guardianship where they have to seek guardianship from the court, and that can be an expensive process for families to go through. So that's why in many of the conversations that I'm having with families, I ask them, do you have a power of attorney, financial and medical? If not, you know, that should be one of the first things that you need to do. These conversations can just happen really naturally, or you can have a formal conversation about what you want to happen. If you look up this durable healthcare power of attorney, there is a whole list of questions that you can just go down and have these conversations with your family and write it down in paper about what you want to happen or not.
There are so many things to think about and plan, and I don't know about your family, Alejandro, but we are not really good about having these kind of heart-to-hearts. My sister Marcela is usually the one that asks the hard questions, but I'm sure there are a lot of misconceptions as well. So if you're listening, are you the one to start those hard conversations? Or would you rather go with the flow and take it day by day? In case you are one to avoid them, here is Ben with some help.
A lot of the conversations that we have with families are about behaviors that the person with dementia may be exhibiting. Some challenging behaviors include what we call rummaging. So they're stacking newspapers or moving things around, hiding things. I often associate that with boredom because a person with dementia is looking for something to do. Because even though a person may have dementia and they're further along in the disease process, it doesn't mean that they just want to sit on the couch all day. They still want to have a meaningful experience and continue to live a meaningful life. For some people, you know, that might mean sitting on the couch. But for many people, it might be helping to wash the dishes, fold the laundry, or maybe the family can find some activities that they did in the past, maybe growing up or for their career, that they can incorporate into their daily routine. So challenging behaviors is a common conversation that I have with families, but also communication strategies. when you have dementia, you process information differently. And so people with dementia can be overwhelmed by too much information. They can be overwhelmed by using too much logic and reasoning because they're living in their own reality. So they might start talking about their mom who died 20 years ago. But if you try to tell them, no, your mom died, you know, she's buried, that might actually upset them. And it could cause frustration, anger on their part, and now it could cause a fight between the caregiver and the person with dementia. And so instead, we might teach them, the caregiver, instead of trying to correct them or bring them back to our reality, ask them, what is your favorite memory about your mom? Or share with them a favorite story about their mom that you've had with them. Or, you know, say they're out on a shopping trip and then redirect them to something else. You know, it's about lunchtime. Why don't we go have some lunch? But learning to communicate with someone who has dementia is like learning a new language. And caregivers often say, I'm doing the wrong thing. And I try to reassure them, there's a lot of wonderful things that you're already doing. Don't beat yourself up. This is just a new way of looking at how their brain is working.
Oh my, so much to unpack, and so grateful for Ben for your insight and the work that you do. And now that he's shared about his work and his passion to help, stay tuned to learn more about Ben's hobbies and the role that gaming played in his love story.
The St. Louis Public Radio, EPRX.
Esto es
We Live Here.
Auténtico. Throughout this season, we have heard how sometimes love is the factor for people to move to St. Louis, following your partner, wife, or husband.
Yes, I've heard stories like that. Even yours, Alejandro, is like that. And I'm still hearing wedding bells. ¡Qué emoción! Listeners, by the time you hear this episode, Alejandro and Adam will be happily wed. And I'm so excited that we got a chance to travel to Oaxaca in Mexico to be there in person. Love is apparently in the air in St. Louis, and for Ben, it's no exception.
Marty is my partner. We've been together for 8 years. We actually met each other playing video games. So before Tinder and any of these dating apps existed. But, you know, when I was in middle school, high school, I was a big gamer. We struck a friendship. We started talking, I believe it was on Skype. So we knew each other, but there was no romantic interest there until I was about 21 years old, where I said, you know, this guy has a lot of qualities that I really like in somebody that I could see a future with. And so we talked about it, and he said, you know, let's see where this goes. So we started dating. I was living in Maryland at that time, and he was living here in St. Louis. The one caveat is that I told him I cannot do long distance for a long time. So if this is going to work, after 1 year, I have to move there to St. Louis, or you have to move to Maryland so that we can see where this goes. Because that was really important to me. So I ended up moving to St. Louis, to finish undergrad, but it was really because of him, to be closer to him and see where this relationship went. And so with Marty, we were lucky enough that we had a lot of family support from his family, where we were able to live with his family for about 4 years so that he could finish his schooling, I could finish my schooling.
How cool is that? When you know, you know. And it has been 8 years for Marty and Ben. 8 beautiful years.
For Ben, initially moving to St. Louis was to pursue love. While doing that, he also found himself.
Giving second chances. I don't need all the answers. Feeling good in my skin. I just keep on dancing.
It was really a journey about finding myself, about learning to love myself. And St. Louis really gave me that opportunity. I think when I first moved here, my whole perspective of St. Louis was tied to Marty because he showed me different places. But then as I was able to find my own space and make an adventure out of St. Louis, I grew to really love it. Knitting is only one of my hobbies, but there's so much life and activities here in the city. You have the various neighborhood associations that host different events. I know that my association at Tower Grove East does wonderful meetups. Benton Park has great concerts at the park on Sundays that we love to attend. Tower Grove has the farmers market. And so I think in being able to explore these places and sitting with myself, he really helped me fall in love with the city, but also find out who I am. And truly being comfortable with myself. Then I feel like living in St. Louis, it's given me the opportunity to explore different opportunities. So for example, going through grad school, I needed something that would calm me down. And one of my friends introduced me to knitting. So for a while in grad school, I was known as a person who knits during class. Because I found that super relaxing. And so I would make shawls, I would make gloves. Now the most challenging thing as a knitter is knowing how to knit a sweater. So I've only partially knit sweaters, but I've never completed that task. One of the other hobbies that I have is playing chess. And I'm part of this wonderful group of people who meet up at different city breweries on Wednesdays to play chess. And they have been super accepting of me as a beginner chess player and, you know, and teaching me. But that's not the exception to the rule. There's so many spaces in St. Louis that are so welcoming. And I find that I am not alone in that experience, that many people who come to St. Louis find that the people here are welcoming, warm and friendly, and really receptive. In St. Louis, there's so many, you know, leagues, activities that you can join, meetup groups for people who are new to the city. I was able to find some of my friends that way, but also through colleagues as well. And just networking, just putting myself out there in different professional groups, meeting new people, volunteering has been also a great way to meet other people.
I need to take Ben's advice and get myself a hobby, honestly. Knitting sounds so relaxing. I see a lot of people on social media doing it. Do you have a hobby, Gabby?
I don't know about knitting, but I love golf. I have found that St. Louis is an amazing place to play. There are so many things that you can do and be.
What I've experienced in this community is that people in St. Louis are very giving. We have a lot of entrepreneurs. We have a lot of communities that just give back. And I want to be part of that in St. Louis. I want to give back to this community, which has brought me so much joy. And so there, you know, there's a lot of work still to be done in St. Louis to make this wonderful city more accessible for different communities. Latino communities specifically is one of, that's a passion for me.
You're not ready for what's coming after the break. All I have to say is thank you, Ben, for opening your heart.
Ben shares with us his journey with mental health in hopes to create awareness on the topic and encourages all to practice self-care.
Et maintenant, pour se promener.
As Ben reflects on the future, it's inevitable for him to mention his role models growing up, his sources of inspiration.
It was great hearing how Ben's family inspired him to be fierce, empowered, and the beautiful person he is today. Whether it is a teacher, mentor, previous boss, or family member, we all have leaned on somebody to become who we are.
Find out what we're made of when we are called to help our friends in need. You can count on me like 1, 2, 3, I'll be there. And I know when I need it, I can count on you like 4, 3, 2, and you'll be there. Cause that's what friends are supposed to do, oh yeah. Ooh.
Getting to where I am now in my career was really due to a lot of wonderful role models that I had growing up in my aunts and my uncles who were also successful Latino immigrants to the United States. And so they were really an inspiration to me in continuing to move forward in my life. For example, my uncle Sebastian, he also came to the United States with his parents. But he is an engineer, and I saw him create a wonderful life with himself. He has a wonderful wife, Mitya Mili, who I love her so much, and they have a wonderful kid. So just seeing him go through this journey, and it wasn't easy. They all had to live together essentially in the beginning in one household and support one another. So I was able to see this family community, and slowly as they helped each other, people were able to branch out and find their own homes and start their own families. And so I think family support is really important, especially when living in the United States is so expensive and financially demanding. Mm-hmm. And so just having wonderful role models. So they were just all an inspiration for me. And I wanted to be an inspiration for, you know, my younger cousins as well, who now look up to me as someone who's been able to fight the fight, build their own life. And my Aunt Mili always tells me, you know, my kids always look up to you. When are you going to visit? So I'm glad that this was really full circle, and I had wonderful mentors and people to look up to, and now I can be that for my family.
As Beck reflects on the realm of possibilities his family opened for him, he also finds himself being the one opening the doors for the next generation, specifically with mental health.
Have you ever felt like nobody was there?
Growing up as a gay man in a very conservative religion was really a struggle for me, where I had to struggle with accepting myself and realizing that, you know, there's nothing wrong with me because I love who I love. But having grown up in that environment really caused me to have a lot of depression and anxiety in my life. So this started back when I was in middle school, you know, as early as I can remember, knowing that I needed to reach out for help. But I feel like I was a very resilient person, so thank goodness for that, because I was able to function with this for such a long period of time, but also have the support of, you know, many people in my life. But it really wasn't until this year where I said, enough is enough. I need to talk to somebody about this. And it just started with a conversation with my primary care physician, where I said, hey, I'm struggling with depression and anxiety. I've been struggling with this my whole life. Something needs to change. And I was prescribed some medication, which has helped me tremendously in level out my ups and downs. And also, you know, medication doesn't solve everything. You also need to reach out for help, talking with a counselor, talking with somebody who can help you through this process. And so that's my next step. I need to talk with somebody. Even though medication has done a lot for me, that's not the only step. And especially as a social worker, the value of therapy is so important. So that was my struggle. It's gonna be a life struggle, but I wanna make sure that I am open with this, about this with the people that are willing to listen, because that's also something that's stigmatized in our community. Even my mom, I've been telling my mom this for years, and she was like, I didn't realize that people could be this down. Like, I thought, you know, you would just be sad for a second, but get over it. And maybe for some people who have never really struggled with this, that's their reality, that they're able to manage their own emotions. But when someone has mental health issues, like a diagnosed depression, it's not that easy. You really need help. And there is so much help out there. If you're struggling with depression or anxiety, there is hope out there. And that's really what kept me going. Things will get better. So I wish I could list all of the wonderful resources that are out there in the community, and maybe we can add that in. But please reach out for help if you're struggling.
Have you ever felt like nobody was there? Have you ever felt forgotten in the middle of nowhere? Have you ever felt like you could disappear? Like you could fall and no one would hear?
Depression is a mood disorder that causes a persistent feeling of sadness and loss of interest. It's also called major depressive disorder or clinical depression. It affects how you feel, think, and behave, and can lead to a variety of emotional and physical problems. Experiencing occasional anxiety is a normal part of life. However, people with anxiety disorders frequently have intense, excessive, and persistent worry and fear about everyday situations. Often, anxiety disorders involve repeated episodes of sudden feelings of intense anxiety and fear or terror that reach a peak within minutes, aka panic attacks, according to the Mayo Clinic. There is treatment for depression and anxiety, and Ben's vulnerability is so empowering. I know that a lot of times we think we are the only ones, and our brain doesn't let us reach out for help or let us see the value of what we bring to the table.
I started therapy after being diagnosed with anxiety, and it has helped me so much. I feel content, I can focus on the now and be present. It took time for me to get there. Each of us will have our own unique journey. But once you reach for that help, things just start getting better.
I feel like I have so much joy and happiness in my life and so much fulfillment with my partner and my dog. So this is really just what makes me realize I made it. And growing up, I didn't think I was going to be able to make it to 30, but here I am at the young age of 31, just living my best life. But I know that my 15-year-old self would be super proud of where I'm at, because I don't think I could have imagined being where I'm at 15 years old. I would tell him, don't be afraid to speak up and ask for help. Because so much of what I did was hiding my emotions and hiding and trying to present my best self to not inconvenience my family, to not look weak. Speak up. Let your loved ones know that you're struggling with this and that you need help. But also, I think my motto even back then was, it'll get better. So I don't know where I learned that, but I'm glad I did.
What about you? What would you tell your younger self? Do you have words of encouragement or a warning, perhaps?
Great questions, Alejandro. Yes, we would love to know. So please tell us. Reach out on social media at Authentico Podcast or send us an email at info@authenticopodcast.com.
Better yet, leave us a voice message. We would love to hear your voices. ¿Qué dicen? ¿Se animan? We'll leave the link in the show notes for you to leave a voice message to your younger self. Maybe we can play them on the air.
What a great conversation, Alejandro. And Ben, thank you. Hasta la próxima, friends. Gracias for listening.
We Live Here is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Find out more about our guests, get show notes and more information, and of course, check out our previous episodes at welivehere.show. St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri, St. Louis. Thanks for listening.
Support for this podcast comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
From PRX.